Good morning, everyone. It is April, what is it today? The 28th. Yeah, April 28th. And we are rolling on the Mary Griffith Show, brought to you each and every morning by Refreshment Services Pepsi and Harvest Ridge Coffee. This morning, I have to admit, I just had to have another Pepsi product. I couldn't do my Harvest Ridge this morning. Don't know why. My stomach's been a little bit queasy the last few days. And now, I drank coffee on Sunday, and I loved it. No problems. But last Friday, I had a little bit of a kickback, and we'll just leave it at that for my Harvest Ridge. So I hope that never happens to you, but I think of Harvest Ridge as my favorite medicine. How am I going to get going in the morning without my Harvest Ridge coffee or without any caffeinated product from Refreshment Services Pepsi? I greatly appreciate their sponsorship for the show. I also greatly appreciate Brandy Deegee coming by. She's with Cornerstone Family Services and Counseling, and we're going to talk today about mental health and different aspects of mental health. She's been a guest on the Mary Griffith Show before, so we'll say welcome back, Brandy.
Thank you, Mary. Thank you for having me.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, your credentials, and your experience in the counseling field.
Sure. I am a licensed clinical professional counselor in the state of Illinois. I have worked in this field since 2010, so we have a couple years under my belt, not fresh out of school in any means. But I have worked with a lot of different families and children. I would say my areas of expertise is children and families, grief and loss, and those major life transitions.
Yes. Well, it's a major life transition. Quincy Public Schools is preparing a unique way to help kids get ready for sixth grade. You know, they're going from their smaller elementary schools, where there are five, to that big junior high building. So tomorrow, they're going to take all the fifth graders out, and they're going to work together. They're going to, all the kids from Rooney, they're going to mix and match them. So Isles and Rooney and Denman and all that, they're all going to get mixed and matched and kind of compete with each other and kind of learn maybe some new friends or maybe who they don't want to be friends with, whatever. But we forget sometimes that as scared as adults can be in transitions, children have some trepidation too. And so this time of year, they're excited. They've achieved something. They're getting out of kindergarten and going to first grade, or they're getting out of fifth grade and they're finally moving on to the big kid school, or they're getting ready to go out to senior high or whatever, or they're getting ready to go out into the real world, which is really scary. What advice do you have for, since children aren't really listening now, mostly parents and grandparents are listening right now to Brandy Deegee, but what advice do you have for parents and grandparents to help pave the way for the successful transfer into a new role as a new school year comes about and one ends and another is ready to begin?
So it's interesting, Mary, that you're talking to me about this, because the topic I kind of prepared for was stress. And there's no doubt that these kids are stressed and they're anxious and they're worried. They may not use those words, but it may present itself in ways of having headaches or lots of energy or stomach aches, or all of a sudden I don't want to go to school, or all of a sudden I do want to go to school. And so for parents to be aware of some of those signs, just like you were mentioning what they're planning on doing, helping them with the transitions, talking to them, what's going to help? What's going to be of assistance with you so this is a smooth transition? Helps immensely for these kids that feel like they have to keep it all together.
That is the hardest part, I think, because we're grown-ups. We know that you'll get over it. Mm-hmm. But they don't know that.
Right.
Because they've never experienced that. Yeah. And I'm not surprised, because when I was a child, I do look back now, especially having talked more with these counselors every month, I try to remember back to my old anxiety levels. What things bothered me when I was in third grade? What things bothered me when I was in sixth grade? And so you do understand that while now in hindsight, those were really ridiculous things, but at the time, they're very, very critical things. And so children will have stress and they will have fear and they will have anxiety. Mm-hmm. So talking about that, acknowledging that, you know, Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood, my favorite show in the whole world. When we do something new, we'll talk about what we'll do. Mm-hmm. So every time you think your child might be a little bit concerned about what's going to be happening. And again, the public school district has orientations mm-hmm. and all kinds of things to try to help that. But parents can start now.
Yep.
And saying, don't worry, just the same way you do things in fifth grade, it's going to be different, but you'll get the routine down or whatever. The same thing you did in kindergarten, it's going to be different at big girl school or big boy school, but there'll be a routine and you'll have a new teacher and you'll have a cubby or whatever. A lot of times you have to try to get them excited about what's new and that they're big kids. And then also say, but don't worry, this will still be there. Is that a good way to attack things?
You're right, Mary. Helping them to see here's what's going to be the same and here's what's going to be a little bit different, and then allowing them opportunities to practice, right? Practice helps them feel so much more confident going in there, whether it's riding the bus for the first time or introducing themselves for the first time or stepping foot in the high school and being like, oh, man, I don't know where anything is. If they've had the opportunity to practice, then that anxiety goes down, and they're able to go in there and go, I've got this.
You know, I was thinking, they do give you a chance to practice riding the school bus, but sometimes it doesn't necessarily come before the first day of school. Yeah. So I was thinking, you know, one fun thing might be to do, just hop on the city bus and mm-hmm. take the whole route, you know, mm-hmm. start downtown at 7th and Vermont, or 7th and whatever is that, Jersey, I guess it is, 7th and Jersey, hop on at the Grand Hub. Take the whole route, you know, maybe take a transfer out at the Harrison Hy-Vee out there on 14th and drive another route, you know. Mm-hmm. Kids would enjoy that. It'd be almost like a carnival ride for a kid. Mm-hmm. And you'd also be able to tell them, you'll have to sit quietly in your seat, and there may right. be other people you can talk to and say hi to when they get on the bus and off the bus, but you have to stay in your seat. And mm-hmm. I think you're right. I think a lot of times we don't think about how reassuring it can be to practice mm-hmm. certain things. Another thing that's always coming up is children of divorce. School gives them a structure. Mom and dad have a visitation schedule that is pretty strict and, you know, consolidated during the school year. When spring break comes, when fall break comes, when Christmas break comes, and then when summer comes, things get really out of whack. So again, talking and preparing. And this is where good parenting comes in, because no matter how much you hate your ex, you don't say, oh, you got to go spend the whole summer with him, the evil one, or whatever. Trying to get them to know, think about the exciting things they'll do there. Yes, they'll miss maybe some of the things only available here. So talk a little bit about that, because sometimes these living situations can change in the summer months as well.
Yeah, you're exactly right, Mary. The more that two parents can co-parent effectively, meaning that they plan out what the summer's going to look like. They may even give a visual calendar for the child or teen so that they're not expecting the worst or anticipating something that's not going to happen. So everything's kind of lined out, and they're still communicating about what's going to be best for them, especially in terms of camps and family trips and all the things that tend to change that schedule over the summer is going to be huge.
Okay, so talking, practicing, getting them excited about the new things. I'm getting ready to go on vacation on Thursday, and I mean, I've been Googling everything there is to do mm-hmm. near the Flamingo Hotel. I mean, I know what time the Flamingo Talk is. Mm-hmm. I know when the Bellagio Fountain's going to go off. I know all this stuff. Now, whether I'll get to do any of that, because who knows what I'll be doing when Flamingo Talk is going on. I may not be out of bed yet. One of the things I'm laughing about is, thank goodness I'm such an early riser, because mm-hmm. with the time differential, mm-hmm. instead of getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning, I'll be getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. I'll be rising and going out for the nightlife. I may have to go to bed at 5 o'clock in the afternoon in Las Vegas, but I'll be refreshed and ready to go at 2, mm-hmm. and there'll still be something to see at 2. So, you know, there again, even as adults, I can't wait to go on vacation, but the stress of getting everything done here beforehand and getting everything underway so I can leave Scott with a clean slate, not have a lot of mess for him to clean up, and then, whew, did I take my medicine? Do I have all this? Do I have everything? Are my clothes, you know, the pants I want to wear, am I sure they're clean? A lot of this stuff just causes undue stress, and so much of it is stuff we can't control. If we would just control what we could control,
yes.
right?
Yep.
And kids have a control problem, because they're not in control of very much in their life.
Right. You're so right, Mary. The more we can give kids purposeful choices, ways they can regain control, even if it's, do you want ice cream tonight or do you want a cookie tonight for dessert? The more they feel empowered and the more they feel like, hey, I'm really invested in this process.
So giving them choices, but not a lot of choices. And as they get older, you might expand that to 3 or 4.
Right.
The other thing is, how do you, because one of the things that's very stressful is the concept of delayed gratification. Mm-hmm. I have to study every night, or I have to do homework every night, or in the summer I have to read 20 minutes every day,
right,
or I won't be prepared. But the reward for that is not immediate. Mm-hmm. So how can parents deal with the anxiety of starting something new, but yet trying to maintain some kind of semblance of, look, you had homework during the school year. You don't have homework in the summer per se, but I expect X, whatever that X is for your family. Is that a good expectation?
So when it comes to kids, they're very motivated oftentimes by rewards, even mm-hmm. if it's small rewards, right? And so if we can set, even if we're delaying gratification for the ultimate goal, at a much further date, if we set smaller little rewards, like if you for the whole week read 3 books, because maybe reading's really challenging, then we'll have a special mommy and child date, right? And it's something that they're invested in. That's kind of the key. You got to have rewards that the child was really speaks to them, that they're invested in, and ones that doesn't necessarily break the bank, but ones that are going to keep them motivated and keep them on track. The other thing I'd like to introduce for parents is do-overs. And this is purposely recognizing that sometimes we're going to slip up, a kid's going to make a mistake, and we go, okay, how about we just do a do-over right now? And that gives them the option of going back and making a different choice.
Okay. I think adults need do-overs too. Absolutely. I have learned as I age and I progress, and people say, why do you watch a children's show like Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood? And I really tell you, the reason I do it is because I need to be reminded of the simplistic lessons that it teaches. When we do something new, let's talk about what we'll do.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes when a friend comes to play, you have to ask what they want
mm-hmm.
to do and not just do what you want to do. This is especially good in training husbands. If you want your dog to sit up and heel, stay, sit, roll over, a treat is how you get them to do that.
Mm-hmm.
The same is true of spouses. You get them to modify their behavior by finding whatever treat it is that they want and making sure they get it.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you have to be careful with rewards, because
mm-hmm.
then kids expect a reward for everything when
right.
some modicum of good behavior is just standard operating procedure.
Mm-hmm.
So first you have to teach them standard operating procedure and reward them along the way. Then later on, you have to say, no, standard operating procedure is not a reward thing. But if you learn a new skill, or if you progress in your maturity. So constantly reinforcing that there's always something new to learn, always a behavior that can be modified.
Right, and readjusting those rewards, right? Once you've done it for 3 days, okay, now we're going to expand it to 5 days. If you can do it for 5 days, can we go a whole week? And we're constantly adjusting, so we're setting that expectation of just a little bit higher, hoping that they'll rise to it, believing that they can, and then helping them see, yep, you were able to accomplish that.
And, you know, we just came off the season of Lent and the Easter season,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of people in the religious world give up or do something. They either add something hard to their agenda
right.
or they give up something they love for 40 days. And if you can do that for 40 days, you can probably do it for the rest
mm-hmm.
of your life
mm-hmm.
because it's become a miniature habit that if you keep reinforcing it, it will continue on.
Right.
I sometimes think, you know, people say, well, religion's just, there is no God. Religion's just something we made up. Well, we did a pretty good job of thinking of ways to make us better people. Some of these rituals and ceremonies are actually quite beneficial
mm-hmm.
to humanity,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean? So what are some of the things in your practice, without giving away, you know, confidentialities,
sure.
what are some of the things that children tell you when they're in therapy that bother them the most, that, you know, when you maybe try to have a discussion with their parents, they're like, I had no idea.
One of the biggest things right now is this sense of being bullied. And a lot of kids use the word bullied in a lot of different ways. And so it might be situations where somebody's picking on them, calling them names, to being pushed down, being excluded. We can even go as far as having derogatory names, and they're telling people, and it's not being addressed in a meaningful way to them. Or the favoritism. This one comes up a lot in the school year, typically at the beginning or at the end of the school year, where I don't think my teacher likes me. They always call or pick on someone else. And so it's usually those two things, or can extend into family stuff with siblings in particular. My brother is the favorite one of the family, and so he always gets da-da-da-da-da. Or I'm the one that's always in trouble, and so I'm always getting punished, and so it can extend that way too.
Well, my brother's nicknames are the favorite and the king, so maybe I have a reason to feel a little. But you know what's interesting about that is, really, because I was the older sister, I always got really, I was always top dog for so long. It is hard to be the younger. In a way, you're the baby, so you get a lot of you get a lot of perks being the baby. The older child has to grow up a lot earlier. I mean, I remember when I had to wait till I was like, I had when I was 11, I had to be home when the street light came on, and suddenly my brother, who's 4 years behind me, he could stay, you know, he could stay out till nine. When he was nine, he could stay out till the street light came on. So I had to wait, you know. Well, he's a boy, you know, all this. So children perceive these things, whether parents mean them or not, or whether teachers mean them or not, children's perception. So dealing with perception as their reality, how do you discuss and acknowledge their perception without enforcing that as a reality, unless you're certain that it is a reality?
Right. So this comes into play also with the negative beliefs they have about themselves. Right. And so oftentimes they will come in with the label of, I'm stupid, I'm horrible, I'm the bad child, I'm always in trouble, whatever it might be. And so I will validate feelings, and then I'll say, but are there other ways we can look at this? Right. And so feelings we validate, the thoughts we kind of tease out a little bit more to see if, is there proof for what you're saying? Is there proof against what you're saying? Are there times when you absolutely shine and you get all of the things correct, and that means that you're not stupid or you're not the horrible kid, right? To just kind of help them see it's not always just black or white.
One thing that I've always been told, having never had children, but I'm around them a lot, never say you are bad, but you did a bad thing. You're not a horrible person, but you made a wrong choice. Let's look for a better choice. Oh, this choices thing. This is the new it word. In second grade now, are we making the best choice? I'm like, I'll tell you one choice I'm about to make is smack y'all, you know, shut up. I have no patience. But again, they're trying to let them know that your action is going to have a consequence.
Right.
You know, we're going to miss 5 minutes of recess if I can't get the math lesson taught.
Right.
So coming right up, it's like, okay, we have recess in 25 minutes. You have to pay attention for 25 minutes, and then blah, you'll be free. But if you don't, and we have to. So really, this weekend, my husband was like, don't yell at me. I want to say, quit doing stupid things, and I won't. But I stopped myself. That was smart of me, wasn't it, Brandy?
It was wise.
I said, I will try not to yell at you. If you stop doing stupid things, it would be so much easier. We've got to take a break. We'll be back. We're having a conversation about mental health and children's mental health in particular, because Brandy deals with a lot of children who have a lot of stress and anxiety. And anytime there's any change in their life, and end of school year, starting of summer, maybe custodial parenting changes, traveling vacation, these are all things that can cause stress for children. And we have to recognize that it can be stressful for kids, and we have to work out some ways that we can help them cope with this and listen to their behavior. This report from the IRSA Farmers Cooperative is brought to you by Rex Battery and Corteva. We are back. Talk Radio 930 WTAD. Brandy DG is here. Brandy DG is here. And, of course, during the farm market, she gave me a complete private counseling session and declared me that I need to be on the couch for a long time. Or I could just take a trip out west. So I'm going to take your advice. I'm going to go on vacation. But Brandy, we've been talking a little bit about especially children, but all of these things that happen to kids happen to adults too. We're just expected to be able to handle it a little bit better. But sometimes when we get those strange little rumblies in our tum-tum, like I've got a little one right now because we were talking about something stressful. Now, I'm not really under stress right now, but just speaking of something stressful kind of gave me a little rumbly. And so you can imagine for children that they're getting those rumbly butterfly feelings all the time, or that feeling of impending doom, which, you know, an adult is not going to have a feeling of impending doom. But sometimes there's just something off. Adults don't quite know what it is. Is it kind of good to go back into our childlike state and say, what's really bothering me here? Because it can't be what I think is bothering me. It's got to be something else, right?
I always ask people to be very curious about what's going on with them. Kids included, right? If you're having some kind of body sensation, usually it's a messenger of some kind. Just let you know, hey, something's a little bit off or something's a little bit wonky. And it's usually asking for attention.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that is really hard, I think, for parents, during the school year, the kids are pretty busy at school. And then they've got maybe some organized sports. They have those things in the summer, too. But all of a sudden, the summer's here, and mom and dad still have to work.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're feeling like, oh, I should be entertaining my children, or I should be making sure they have all these fabulous experiences. And the kids want some level of downtime. And that's the other thing. Just because mom and dad don't want to deal with it, they will overprogram the kids so that from 7 o'clock in the morning till 5:30 in the afternoon, the child is doing everything. That's not good either.
You're right. Right now, we are in a place in society where we are go, 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 and that is not an exception for the kids that we see either. They are constantly, sometimes they get up earlier than even I do, and they go well into a good portion of the evening, sometimes 8:30 and beyond, with their games and their practices and all the other extracurriculars. And so if you think about stress, we can handle and effectively manage low to moderate stress, but when it starts becoming chronic, meaning day in, day out, it starts taking a toll.
And it's the buildup day over day, day mm-hmm. over day.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned bullying, and kids are now kind of familiar with bullying, but I've also seen a trend of everything is bullying. Now, again, you know, he beat me at chess. That's not bullying.
Right.
Now, if he's a bad sport about it, but some, I don't want kids to be snowflakes. Sometimes you're not going to hit the home run. Sometimes you're going to get thrown out at first base. That's not bullying. Maybe the way kids react to it or names you might be called afterwards.
Right.
But I've noticed that some of the kids who are the biggest bullies are the first ones to turn around and say, he bullied me. And it's almost like trendy now. It's almost like if I'm a victim, it's a trendy thing. I worry about that. As a parent, I don't, you know, like I said, I'm not a parent. I don't have kids. I can, you know, if my kid got beat up on the playground, I'd want to go beat up that kid and then take on his mom and dad, you know? So, I mean, your natural protective instinct is there for parents, but you got to step back from that a minute and make sure all the factors, because decisions made without informed factors cause problems
mm-hmm.
in all kinds of family mm-hmm. relationships, don't they?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And especially if you're melding families over the summer, like stepchildren are together,
mm-hmm.
You better believe your kids to a degree when they say something's happening. Because these are kids that aren't together all the time. And they don't, you know, as much as I really got mad at my brother sometime, I wouldn't have really done anything to physically harm him. And I would have defended him from anybody who tried to physically harm him. But that's not the natural protective instinct for stepchildren. Is there a more of a problem in the therapy world because of all these convoluted families and sometimes families that have no real legal relationship to each other? It's just mom's boyfriend's kids, and now we're all expected to go to the park together.
I think there's just more difficulties and potentials for things to not go as smooth as they could. The more you blend in different people. So I'm thinking about, even if we were talking about a group of people that didn't know each other, the more you can find commonality, the easier the group's going to flow. It's no different in a family situation. If we have his, hers, and ours, and we're blending them all together, the more that it all flows together, they all have a common theme. Maybe they all are into softball or baseball. Great. We know the summer is likely going to be filled with that. But if they're in all these very randomized, personalized activities, then you can imagine we're going to be like a chicken with our head cut off, running around everywhere.
And so trying to find something that brings them all together, yet saying, if you really excel at this, I want you to go to basketball camp or something. It really is. Especially since children don't often, as Daniel Tykwer said, use your voice, use your words. They sometimes have a hard time relating that. Are we losing the ability to talk? Because again, as parents now, the younger generation of parents, they're just using their thumbs to talk the whole time. Their mouth isn't moving. Their thumbs are doing all the talking. And kids are kind of getting that same, they're falling into that same category. I hate to sound like such an old fuddy-duddy, but I was out at Sunday brunch with my girlfriend the other day, and we were just chit-chatting the whole time. I know it's hard to believe I could talk, but I looked over at a family. There was a granddad and then two parents and three children, and none of them were talking to each other. They were all on their devices.
Yeah, and I think you see that more and more all the time, Mary. It's not uncommon for even the teens that I work with sometimes to come in and want to play these games that you would typically find when you are 8, maybe 10 years old, but they're just wanting because of the connection, because they're getting one-on-one, undivided attention. So there is something to be said about parents being very present, not just being physically there, but present, attentive to their child, that just fills a child's bucket up like no other. And we're, as adults, we're the same way. If you have that person that's really giving you everything they've got, trying to understand from your perspective where you're coming from, you're like, yeah, I want to spend more time with them. They're awesome.
Well, I just remember sitting there looking at that and remembering how when I used to go to lunch or whatever with grandma, and, you know, grandma would be telling me about how, you know, she used to make pancakes that looked like, a mouse, or she used to make pancakes that looked like a turtle. And, back when she was a kid, they had this on their pancakes. And, ooh, but this grandfather was with these grandkids, and they were not learning anything from him. He was not learning anything about them. They all were just sitting there. I don't know what they were all reading. They were obviously all reading different things. I just thought to myself, what the hell could be so important that a grandparent is out with their grandkids, that you don't have anything to talk to them about? But part of that is because it's hard to tell the kids to put away the device at the dinner table when the parents can't get off the device at the dinner table.
And that's exactly right. I was recently out this weekend myself with my husband, and we went to a restaurant here in town, and I looked over, and this couple was having a date, but they were texting back and forth the whole time, not talking to each other, but texting, because you could tell by the way they were exchanging stuff, they were laughing at each other's comments back and forth, and I thought, is this really what it's come? The dating world has succumbed to just texting back and forth when you're sitting right in front of each other?
I guess maybe they don't want somebody to hear their conversation, but it's certainly, yeah. And this is the 20th anniversary of YouTube. And again, there's nothing wrong with any of these things. Do them together.
Right.
Say to your kids, hey, what are you looking at? And if it's some ridiculous YouTube video that a teenager would be interested in, watch it, laugh.
Right.
You know, do whatever. I mean, it's the same thing that, you know, I mean, why in the world does anybody go to a T-ball game? We know what the outcome's going to be. Everybody's going to hit. Everybody's going to score. The score's going to be 36-36 when it's over, and everybody's going to get an ice cream cone afterwards. But yet we go because it's important that mom and dad be there to see our big hit or whatever. We don't realize sometimes, and yet we had it when we were our kid. We were disappointed when we were kids. We know the disappointment of somebody not coming to something that we cared about, or somebody not sharing that we got an A on a report card when we tried so hard. Why is it so hard for us to figure it out?
Well, it's interesting because oftentimes parents show up for the big things, but they underscore or miss how much those little things mean over time.
But their definition of the big thing may not be the kid's definition
exactly
of the big thing.
Exactly right. So if you took the extra time to really explore what's their anxiety about this upcoming test, as opposed to going, oh, go study for your test, that might change the whole mindset of that child and their ability to perform well on that test. And it's as simple as just spending the extra 10, 15 minutes exploring why are they so anxious.
And the other thing, I mean, it is hard because sometimes you have difficulty helping your kids, especially at the end of the year. Now they got big tests coming up.
Right.
How can I help a kid with math? I can't hardly do it myself. How can I say, oh, here's an essay on Shakespeare. Get it started this way. If you can't really have the ability to do that yourself, but to say and commiserate with them and to say, well, let me read a chapter of The Tempest. And maybe I can throw out an idea from my perspective. Here's what I got out of it. Did you see the same thing? Or, you know, kids saying, I know this is different. You know, I just learned, this is so funny, you're never too old to learn. On my 66th birthday, I always have trouble at a fancy restaurant, or any restaurant, where the bread plate is and where the water glass goes. And one of my friends said, you make your hands look like a B or a D. And if it's a B, that's your bread plate. It's on your left. And if your hand makes a D, that's your drink. That's on your right. I'm like, where was this when I was going out to my first formal date?
Right.
Now, granted, it may look kind of strange to be making little, you know, B's and D's with your hands. But I'll never forget that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's the kind of generational knowledge. Why the heck did my mother keep trying to tell me about the forks and everything if she'd have just said, make a B and make a D, and you'll always never put your bread on your partner's bread plate? Duh. So we all can learn something.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of stuff kids remember.
Yes.
You remember things that that people taught you when you were little, and that's how you put it all together. I don't really remember my grandfather very much at all. He passed away when I was very young, but he could snap his fingers, and I couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
And he kept doing it, and I kept trying. Of course, I was reusing the wrong finger, and I wasn't, but it was funny because that's probably the only memory I really have of my grandpa is him snapping his fingers and trying to teach me how to snap my fingers. And I thought it was so magical that he could do that.
Mm-hmm.
And he just said, you keep trying, and when you get older, then you'll be able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So don't overlook their anxieties and their frustrations and their fears, because they're very real.
Mm-hmm.
And celebrate those little things, because those little things are really the big things. That's what they'll remember.
Mm-hmm.
If parents are concerned and they need some maybe professional help, how can they get in touch with you or with another professional at Cornerstone or any therapeutic counseling? It's not just Cornerstone. There's lots of options out there for parents.
Right. If any parent that's listening or any parent that you may know is struggling, or if their child is struggling and they're needing some extra support, you can contact Cornerstone by phone at 217-222-8254. You could also go online, check out our website, see if any of the therapists sound like a good fit with you. If you're looking and you're like, yeah, I'm not completely sold, I just want to get general information, feel free to contact any of the mental health providers, whether that be QMG, Bless, Clarity, Transitions, SIU, all of these places will be able to assist you.
Or just go on YouTube, Difficult Teenager, How to Deal, and maybe it'll help. Brandy DG, thank you so very much for coming in today. Golly gee, I wish I had a kid now. I'm so smart. Now I know how to raise one. Well, too late for me. Thank you so very much.